The Dentalpreneur Podcast. Okay, doctor, it's time to put down that handpiece. You're listening to the show dedicated to helping dentists get their lives back. It's time to decrease your stress, increase your profitability, and regain your passion. Now introducing your host, Dr. Mark Costas.
Welcome to the podcast. This episode is being sponsored by my book, Pillars of Dental Success: Systems and Strategies to Streamline the Marketing and Management of the Modern Dental Practice. If you'd like a free copy, just visit my website at truedentalsuccess.com. That's truedentalsuccess.com. And while you're there, feel free to pick up my free video entitled Cracking the Top 1%, which is a live keynote presentation that I gave on practice systemization and overhead control. Two great resources completely for free for the listeners of this podcast. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Dentalpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Costas, and today I am so pleased to have my good friend, Dr. Aaron Nicholas, back as a repeat guest. Today I'm going to call him a co-host because Aaron's going to teach us all a lot about what he does in his practice. He has experienced the largest growth after 27 years in practice this past year, which, you know, if you think about it, a lot of people would be winding down their careers and that they'd be on the tail end of the bell-shaped curve going in the wrong direction after 27 years of practice. But Aaron experienced 40% growth this year, which is just absolutely crazy. So he's still hungry. He's still every day constantly looking for an edge and a way to improve the practice numbers. So I'm just fascinated to talk to him all the time, which is why I had him come back as a repeat guest. And if you guys don't remember, the last time Aaron was on, and you guys can check, I'm not sure what episode number it was, I will put it in the show notes, but the last time Dr. Nicholas was on, he was speaking about, just in passing, he said, oh yeah, speaking of hygiene, one of my hygienists just had a $6,000 day. And I was like, hold on a second, dude. We could have a whole podcast episode about how your hygiene department, how a single hygienist in your hygiene department had a $6,000 day. And so we basically put a to be continued on that episode. And so today is the continuation of that episode. We're going to get to as much of what he does that is so unique in the hygiene department versus what most of us do in our hygiene departments. And we're going to go over that. And he's going to go over a little bit about how he was able to experience 40% growth after 27 years in the dental profession, which is, to me, I mean, this year, we've had an incredible year. I think we're at 29% growth in my main practice, which that is hustling and that is everything hitting on all cylinders. 40% plus growth is extremely, extremely impressive. So that is probably the longest intro that I've ever had, Aaron. So how you doing, Dr. Nicholas?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I forgot that you were there for a second. I was enjoying just talking to myself there, and to our friends in we are now in 90 countries around the world. So hope that doesn't make you nervous.
No problem. I had not realized that you had experienced that much growth in your practices. You're a humble guy. You haven't said a word of that to me.
Well, you know, if I've done 29, I'm not going to be bragging about 29 when my friend here has done 40% growth in a year, because you know, that's just the kind of guy that I am. But thank you for saying that I'm humble, but I think it's more intimidated. I'm more intimidated than anything because, you know, 40% growth after 27 years in the profession. I think a big part of it is physically, Aaron, you keep yourself in really, really good shape. You're a CrossFitter and you're a runner and you're doing these cleanses all the time with your girlfriend. And I think that, am I mistaken? Do you think that your energy level is just as high or higher than when you were a younger man?
Well, my energy level is definitely higher because when I first got in practice, I weighed about 250, 260, and I peaked out at about 285.
Oh my gosh.
And wow. Right now I weigh about 192, 193. So I'm actually in the best shape of my life.
And when you say 190, if I weighed 190, I would look heavy because of my height, but you're a taller guy. So 190, that's dispersed pretty evenly and you're very, very lean.
Yeah. I'm right around 6 foot. So.
Okay. Yeah. That's about your ideal weight, I think.
Yeah. I mean, It's definitely partially the dieting and definitely partially the CrossFit. And I know everybody thinks it's a cult, but it's it's been a lot of fun. And so I've really enjoyed it. I've been doing that for a couple of years now, and that's just been great.
Okay. So, you get cardio because you like to run, and then the CrossFit is mostly for your muscle tone and that sort of thing. Or do you think that if you didn't run, you could still maintain your weight?
I think if I didn't run, I could still maintain my weight. I was a hardcore runner when I started CrossFit. I was like, okay, I'll do it like 3 times a week and that'll be great. And as I got into it more, I really enjoyed it more and more. And there is quite a bit of cardio there too. And so at this point, I'm doing CrossFit about 6 days a week. I had listened to I forget the guy's name, who was one of the people who started CrossFit, and they were asking him about how it works and that sort of thing. And he's like, well, you know, so you can deadlift 250, 350 pounds. Great. Let's go run a mile. Now come back in. Now how much can you deadlift? Oh, the same. Great. Let's go run another mile. Come on back in and do it again. Yeah. You know, and there's definitely this, we're going to get you tired and then see how much muscular, you know, strength availability that you have at that point. And so it's a very functional, you're not just lifting super heavy weight. You're not just running. You're doing everything together, which, let's face it, that's more of what life is like.
Yeah. That's more applicable to, you know, having an all around healthy body, I guess. I was at CrossFit with my wife a couple months ago now. And they had this, have you heard about the Murph, the workout, the Murph?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So I happened in there on one Saturday and it was Memorial Day and they do this thing called the Murph. And do you remember the guy's name? Captain Murphy. He was a Navy SEAL.
Right.
He died in battle. He was actually featured in the movie Lone Survivor.
Right.
So they created, in memory of him, they created this workout called the Murph.
Right.
And it's 100, 200, 300. So it's 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 squats. But you run as fast as you can a mile before the workout, and then you do the workout, and then you run as fast as you can a mile after the workout, and then they time you basically. And what I didn't know was that people do this. I mean, ridiculous, like 18 minutes, 22 minutes. And I was going as fast as I can. 100 pull-ups is no easy feat, right? In any length of time. But the way we did it is we did 20 sets, 5 pull-ups, and then what was it? 20 push-ups and 30 squats or something like that. Something like that. However, it works out to 100, 200, 300. And,
right.
Oh man, that was one of the best workouts I've ever had. And I was dripping sweat. And, what's tough is that they have girls in there that are like real CrossFitters. I'm not a real CrossFitter. I work out in different ways, but these girls were ridiculous. These girls were doing pull-ups like they were nothing. And, squats. They were doing jump squats instead of regular air squats. They were making all of us guys look terrible. Have you ever tried that workout, the Murph?
I've done Murph twice. I gotta say, if you've never done CrossFit and you just walked in off the street and did that, you're in pretty darn good shape to start with. When I did it, we had one guy at the gym, and some of these guys will put on a weight vest of about 60 to 70 pounds, because that's about the weight that a Navy SEAL, the weight of a pack that a Navy SEAL walks around with.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
And they do Murph with the weight belt on, or with the weight vest on. And one of the guys at the gym did that the very first time I was there. And I was just kind of, he did not finish in a really fast time, but I was just amazed that he could do it at all, because 100 pull-ups with a 70-pound weight vest on.
Yeah, we had some guys wearing weight belts, not the vest, but they had these belts around their waists, and they were in combat boots. So I was really impressed with some of these guys.
Yeah.
And some of them were in full fatigues in memory of Captain Murphy. So, sorry guys, we're talking more about fitness. But I mean, the bottom line here is that Dr. Nicholas has experienced 40% growth, which is the largest amount of growth that he's had in a 12-month span of time after 27 years of practice. So we're going to get more into how he was able to do that. A big part of how he was able to do that was because of his hygiene department. Now, Aaron, I have his numbers right in front of me here, and Aaron's hygiene department is, now we're talking about his production, if you don't mind me saying, Aaron, well, he has a multi-million dollar practice. Let's just say he is maybe between $150,000 and $250,000 a month monthly production. Okay, that includes the hygiene department and one part-time associate. So they are doing some serious dentistry in his practice. And your, let's see, your hygiene production is 33% of your overall production. So in order for the hygiene department to be able to produce exactly one third of a huge number, that is a very, very vibrant hygiene department. What happens a lot of times is we like to see our clients' hygiene departments between 30 and 33%. Yours is on the high end, Aaron.
Yeah, but I think that's actually last month was higher than normal, but usually we're right around that 30. 33, I think, is the highest it's ever been.
Okay, yeah, that's what you have on the average for the year. So you're it's pretty good. So, you know, 33%, that it's very, very difficult for some hygiene departments to keep up, you know, with a very, very productive doctor side. So yours, you are a very, very productive doctor side. So in order for them to get 33%, something very special must be happening. So you did a presentation. We just got back from Washington, D.C. just a couple weeks ago at a mastermind meeting that you gave a formal presentation at. And that presentation was all about your hygiene department. And part of the subtitle of that presentation was how to average $2,000 to $6,000 per hygienist per day in your hygiene department. And people were like, yeah, how in the world is that even possible? I don't have, you know, I don't have an associate dentist that can average between $2,000 and $6,000. And they have a lot more, you know, procedures at their disposal than a hygienist, obviously. So why don't you break down just some of the basics, Aaron, of what you talked about in Washington, D.C., and how in the world your hygiene department can average such a high dollar amount?
Okay. Well, the first thing that I said during that presentation is, you know, this isn't everybody's cup of tea. You know, not everybody wants to do what's necessary to have those kind of numbers come out of a hygiene department.
Sure.
I also said initially, this is in a non-PPO, non-HMO, non-Medicare practice. So we're a regular fee for service. You know, we're not in Hollywood, California or anything. But, you know, we're a standard fee-for-service practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not selling a ton of products. You know, we're selling a lot of – we sell some toothbrushes, not a ton, the electric ones. We're not selling a ton of fluoride gel to take home and that sort of thing. This is mostly on what's being done by the hygienist each day when they come to work. Some of the pieces of this are going to be, you know, you talked about me being in good shape and that sort of thing. You've got to be willing to get up and go do hygiene checks, because that's the only way that your hygienists are going to see patients is at the end of that appointment. You got to get up and go see the hygiene check, or have an associate who will get up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
We do assisted hygiene. I've been doing that for forever. It seems like when I initially did it, I actually had handed a VHS tape to my hygienist to introduce the idea to her, so that tells you how long ago it was. Okay, it wasn't a DVD, it was a VHS tape, so it's been quite a while.
Okay.
And these days, typically for me, 3 days a week, I have two double booked hygienists that are seeing patients at the same time that I am. So that means that, you know, unless they're doing a scaling root planing or something of that sort where it's going to be a longer procedure and they're not going to have another patient in the other chair, I'm probably going to do checks on 3 to 4 hygiene patients every single hour. And for some people, that's a nightmare. I associated when I was a younger doc, and that hygienist wanted to do assisted hygiene, and the doc was not willing to because he said, you know, I don't want to jump up twice an hour and go check hygiene. You know, that's just, it's too chaotic for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that just does not fit. Yeah, just does not fit some people's personality, correct?
Right, right. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine, you know? There are some folks still, I think it's less than it was when I got out of dental school, that said, you know, assisted hygiene, you know, you're not going to give your patient as good a care as if the hygienist does the whole thing. And my answer to that has always been, why take a highly compensated staff member and make them tear down and clean up a room and shoot x-rays when you could get someone else to do that? And the hygienist can spend her time doing what she went to school to do, which is to clean teeth, talk about oral hygiene, talk about all those things that are associated with that, and really help the patient in that way, rather than worrying about, you know, did I scrub the room down or not?
Yeah,
you know,
so you're making a really important distinction here, Aaron, and that distinction is that, you know, spending good quality patient time is important, but she's not necessarily, or he is not necessarily spending good quality patient time while they're cleaning the room, right? Or
right.
while they're taking x-rays, because there's not much conversation happening while the x-rays are being taken anyway, you know? So why not have somebody that's, you know, not as highly compensated doing that sort of thing so that, you know, your high paid hygienist can go on and spend good quality time and only good quality time with a patient in the next room.
Right. And if you map out how long a hygiene appointment is and how much time is actually spent cleaning the patient's teeth and talking to them, generally you're in an hour appointment, if you're not double booked, you're going to end up with probably 30 to 40 minutes where the hygienist is actually doing what she's paid to do, mm-hmm. and not cleaning up rooms and setting them up. If you look at a double booked schedule and you look at it, the time that she's in the room with the patient, you'll find that she's going to spend about 30 to 40 minutes doing the thing that she's really paid to do. So it's literally the same. And, you know, my patients are used to this, but quite frankly, as long as both the people, well, all the people that are taking care of the patient, from the receptionist that greets them when they come in, to the assistant that takes them back, to the hygienist that works with them, to the doc, you know, to the receptionist or your financial person on the way out, as long as people treat them well and show interest in them, patients are fine. They don't notice whether they saw the hygienist for, you know, 30 or 40 minutes today, or they saw her for an hour today. You know, as long as they're being treated well and taken care of, they're good.
Mm-hmm. True. And I mean, obviously they are used to doing this and they are aware of the fact that they're not supposed to appear rushed and jumping from room to room and not to be short with the patients. There are definitely different ways to ensure the patient that, you know, they weren't shorted time with the provider. And we do that all the time. I have a PPO office and I have to sometimes be in three rooms in an hour plus hygiene checks. And I don't think any of my patients ever feel like I'm, you know, shorting them time. But it does take some practice.
No, it's true. I mean, we've had one or two patients that have said, "Hey, are you guys looking for anyone? Because things are so nice and relaxed here. I'd love to come work here." And we all just kind of snicker.
Yeah.
You know, you may run down the hallway to go do that check, but you stop and you take a deep breath and you walk in the door like you have all the time in the world.
That's
and
right.
That's the way you deal with that patient. And then you can run back if you need to, you know, but
that's
it's a matter of you need to sell it. You know, I mean, you need to look like you need to spend the time and not look like you're spending the time, but you need to be very focused that if I'm going to come in here and do this, that I'm going to spend all the time with this patient that they need. One of the very first things I started doing when we started doing this was at the end of the appointment, I would sit the patient up, I would look them in the eye and I would say, "Do you have any other questions for me today?" And then I would answer whatever question they had. And then I would ask the same question again. And I would keep asking that question until they said no. And then, "Thanks for coming in and seeing us. Have a great rest of your day." And then I walk down the hallway to ensure for myself that, you know, I've taken the best care of this patient that I possibly can.
Right. I love that. And you have been actually shadowed me at my practice. I've been to your practice, but unfortunately it was closed at the time because you were under renovations. But you've actually right. been to my practice and shadowed me. And we have very, very different styles of communication with our patients. But, you know, I do, you know, my own version of what you just said. You know, I'm very, very, I guess, personal with my patients, and they're all, I act like they're all my best buddies, and I know a lot about their background, and I ask the three rapport building personal questions that lead down rabbit holes, and we have deep conversations, and you did mention that you were like, "Wow, you have quite a way with your patients. I could never do that, but it seems to work well for you."
Yeah.
And everybody's going to have their own style, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, any doc that's been in practice a bit and is doing well, you know, in practice, has learned some way with a style that is comfortable for them to communicate with their patient and to build that rapport. Because without it, you know, the patients are not going to feel like they're taken care of.
Right. Sure. Okay. So we established that yes, it's assisted hygiene. But let's get into the nitty gritty about $2,000 to $6,000. That's a pretty tall claim, there, buddy. But
okay.
but I see that you do it. I mean, clearly you do that. 33% of the overall huge production comes from the hygiene department. So let's talk tangibles. What else is happening in there?
Okay, so part of what's going to happen in there is that we do fluoride for both adults and kids, which means that you have to have staff who are trained to present that and to talk to patients about that and who believe in it. Because if they don't believe in it, it doesn't matter if they say all the right words. They're never going to, a patient's never going to decide that's the right thing to do because you don't believe in it. If you believe in it, then they're much more likely to accept that. Same thing with sealants for kids. Same thing with, we actually do a lot of night guards out of hygiene. And we actually give our hygienists like half credit on the night guard because usually that impression is taken in their room and they've been a big part of that happening. So, you know, those sorts of things get presented to a patient.
Oh, there's a big potential there then. If they're getting, are they getting all of that production for a night guard? Because that's a pretty high ticket item.
No, they're getting half.
Okay, because, so they get half of the production for that.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Because someone's got to put that in. So, they're getting those. And, you know, they don't do a ton of night guards. You know, it's just one of the things. They used to get half the production for doing whitening for the same reason, but we've got that on constant special, so we don't do that anymore because it's too cheap as it is. Mm-hmm. I can't afford to do that with them.
Okay.
So all those sorts of things, and then sometimes even for some adults, adult sealants, you know, because we have those adults that just need the sealants. You know, they're brushing, they're doing everything they know how to do, and they're still, you know, deep grooves, and they're still getting cavities, and so sometimes that's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you've got to believe in it yourself before you're going to present it to a patient.
Sure.
So if we're doing this, then we have a number of different pieces of paperwork that we use to communicate between the front and the back. So let's back up a little bit. So the patient's chart gets pulled and it's getting ready for the day, and the person up front will check the insurance to make sure it's current. And we have a little label that goes on there and it says the patient is in for this kind of a visit. They are due for x-rays or they're not due. If they are due, then the x-rays are, and I'm talking about bite wings, mm-hmm. are covered by insurance or they're not. Same thing for panoramic x-ray, covered by insurance or not. Fluoride, since we recommend for everybody, is it covered by insurance or not? If it's not, how much is it going to be? And the same thing for the other two. So that when the assistant brings the patient to the back, all the things that she needs to know for the initial part of the appointment are right there on the chart. Mm-hmm. Okay. And having the label on the chart filled out already keeps everybody honest. Okay. This is the kind of the first step in the accountability with the front desk and there's different steps of accountability along the way, that we know this gets done. If this isn't on the chart, then that patient's not going back until it gets done. And we all know who didn't do this. So there's, you know, no one wants to look bad in front of their peers. And so that's our first step of accountability.
I like that. Yeah. Okay.
So the assistant brings the patient back, you know, goes through the change of medical history and it, you know, and has them sign that, fills that little form out, presents which x-rays are due that day and whether they're covered by insurance or not. And then we'll take the appropriate x-rays. Then gets them all ready. Are there any concerns? Writes that down. We have a piece of paper to communicate from the assistant to the hygienist so that when the hygienist walks in, you know, if the assistant's there, great, and they can brief her. If she's not, all she has to do is pick up this piece of paper, the pink sheet, and she can go down and see what's been done so far, what the conversation has been so far, and, you know, greet the patient. Hi, I can see that this has happened so far, that you're having an issue with this. Is there anything else going on? And then she can go through with the appointment from there. So she'll go through, talk to the patient a little bit about what she sees going on. There's also a management card that we use that shows all the treatment that we've recommended in the past. And on there are places for, you know, what date the treatment was recommended, why it was recommended. So she can talk intelligently about what's going on. She mm-hmm. can look at what's going on in the mouth, what hasn't been done, and can discuss that with the patient, hand her a mirror or take a picture with an intraoral camera, either way. We actually like mirrors better in our office. We ran into a problem years ago where we'd take the pictures with the camera and we have TVs on the ceiling. We'd put them up there and then we'd show them to the patient. And we got into this little pointing thing where the patient would end up at the TV and go, okay, now that one up there, like, is that down here in my mouth? And then they point in their mouth where they thought it was. We go, no, no, it's over on the other side. And it just got to be ridiculous. And so we just started doing the mirror thing. It's like, here's the mirror and we'll just show you. And we find that, you know, patients do pretty well with that. And it's right there in their mouth. They're looking in their mouth and they're seeing it. And so.
And it's clearly not hindering treatment plan acceptance if you guys are up by 40% this year. So, okay.
Yeah. I actually think it helps, quite frankly, because I spend a lot less time playing point and shoot. Okay.
Got it.
So, you know, we're going through and she's talking with patients about that, representing treatment that hasn't been done, explaining why it needs to be done, talking to them about their oral hygiene, you know, what's working, what's not working. Do we need to figure out something else for you to help you clean this area because you're not getting to it? Talking to them about some strategies for making sure that they're flossing every day, why it's important, you know, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. The assistant will come back in, the hygienist briefs the assistant, and then at that point, the hygienist goes out to go to the next patient. The assistant has been doing the same thing in the other room that she had just got finished doing in this room one. So she comes back in, I get called, I come in, and then if the assistant's there, great. If she's not, guess what? The pink sheet's still there. And it has other notes that were written by the hygienist about what she found, what the pocket depths were, if they talked about different oral hygiene items or things that the patient needs to do, so that I'm up on that. And so I'll come in and greet the patient and talk them a bit, and I'll literally pick up the pink piece of paper and say, okay, so, you know, the hygienist said X, and I'll read down through it. Does that cover it? Did you have any questions about any of that so far? And, you know, usually it's no. Sometimes there are, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Lean them back, go through, do the exam, represent what needs to be done, sit them back up, talk to them about that again, questions, and, you know, yes or no. I'll then look at the assistant and go, okay, so our next visit's going to be X. And we'll get that squared away for you. Have a good day, and I'm out the door to wherever it is I'm going next. The assistant will then take the patient, ask if there she has any other questions about things, because sometimes patients ask questions they don't want to ask the doc, and that's fine. Once she's ready to go, takes her out front, hands her off to the front desk person, lets her know what we did today, what issues there were, if treatment was recommended, and then and hands her off. Says goodbye to the patient, goes back in to clean that room, and meanwhile the receptionist looks at the patient and says, that's great, how was your visit? I see Dr. Nicholas has recommended X, and then starts talking about how to get that set up and squared away. So one of the things that's going on in this is that the patient has had whatever treatment that is presented 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes 7 times, depending on how many people have been in and out and talked to them about the treatment. The other thing that's going on is if we get in the room at the very beginning and the assistant is talking with the patient about, you know, we're looking at doing some sealants. Let's say it's a kid, you know, looking at doing some sealants, and it's 4 teeth or whatever, and they'll go up front, fill out another little form, which is a treatment that we want to do for them, an authorization form. Mm-hmm. And then the front desk can get all the financials together for that. Talk to mom, who's probably sitting in the waiting room. If it's for the patient and you have to talk to the patient, they'll zip in there and talk to them about it. Get the okay. And by the time the hygienist has finished cleaning teeth, all the stuff for doing sealants or doing fluoride or doing whatever the next thing is sitting in the room. And so there's no break in continuity. And you just sit down and take care of whatever's going on and then keep moving. Because the time isn't really in doing the procedure. I mean, how long does it take to do 4 sealants? You know, how long does it take to do 4 quads of sealants? A little more, okay? Mm-hmm. How long does it take to take an impression for a night guard? Not a whole lot. Or whitening, not a whole lot. It's the time getting stuff set up and getting the financials squared away and finding that, oh, this ran out of this back in the back, and so now we have to haul it up front and have to find it in the supply room. Oh, there's not any there. Check in room 3. You know, it's all those things that take time. The actual treatment's really kind of short. Mm-hmm. So if you can get all that ready to go and squared away, then, you know, you can do a lot of unscheduled treatment right there in the same amount of time that's available that you had scheduled for this patient already.
Today's episode is being brought to you by JetLab, home of the $77 Zirconia crown. If you're looking for an exceptional dental lab that's both affordable and reliable, visit jetlabservices.com. That's JETLabServices.com and order a starter kit. This is the lab that I personally use for all of my Crown and Bridge, and I couldn't be happier with their consistency and awesome customer service. So here you go and enjoy the episode. You know, one of my mantras is you know, when people are talking about, you know, our practice just seems clunky and inefficient, and it just doesn't seem like there's enough hours in the day, and we're always running behind. I always kind of say, you know, is this a staff issue? Because a lot of times people are pointing fingers at their own staff, saying, you know, they're just not sharp. They're not sharp like your staff is, Mark or Aaron. You just have better people that work for you. And really, I don't really attribute it to you. You have an incredible staff, but really, what the differentiating factor here is that you have given your team all of the resources that they need to be successful, to reach their full potential. And that's really the bottom line. So one of my mantras is, are you giving your team every opportunity, every resource that they need to be successful? And clearly you are. I mean, you have a form and a process and a system for every little thing in your office. I mean, is there anything in your office in the flow of hygiene that you can think of that isn't completely systemized?
Pretty much everything is systemized. And if it isn't, and we realize it, then we go ahead and systemize it. I will say, though, that one of the best, you know, my staff is good and they're well-trained and, you know, and they're the best, but they're not like superwomen either. You know, they forget things sometimes, but if you have systems in place to make the forgetting harder to do, you know, if there's that label on the front of the chart, and, you know that as the assistant, when you pick it up, that label's supposed to be there and filled out a certain way, and it's not filled out. Well, even if you forgot to do it, this now you have an accountability, and this assistant's going to do that. If you go in the back and you walk in, and the hygienist walks in, and, you know, the medical history hasn't, the change in medical history hasn't been filled out, and the pink sheet for communication hasn't been filled out with anything, well, she knows that somebody's dropped the ball, and she's going to say, hey, you know, what are we doing here? And so there's an accountability that's built in every step along the way. One of the best things I ever did was when I started doing the double booked, the assisted hygiene, is that I kept trying to get this thing to work and it wouldn't work. And I couldn't quite figure out why it wouldn't work. But I had a friend who had a practice about 8 hours away. And I took my staff and I loaded them all up onto a bus and we drove down to his town. I put them up overnight. And we went into their office the next day, and all I had them do, there wasn't a program of any sort, just hang out with your counterpart in this office. And that's all they did all day, okay? And just saw how they ran things and what happened here, there. End of the day, we all went back home. The next week, literally, all of a sudden, everything ran better. Because there's a certain learning that happens just by sitting next to someone who's doing it, and you realize, oh, that's how it's done. That makes perfect sense now. Whereas you couldn't come up with it on your own, but once you see it and experience it, it's a whole different deal. And then they started going, we need a form so that we know X. Okay. The other thing too is my back office manager is like crazy organized. And so she's really good at making those forms up. But, you know, we sit down with everybody and we go, okay, this is the form we're going to make up. And these are the things we think we need to know. Anybody have any other suggestions or other things that you think we need to put on this form? And we'll bat it back and forth. We'll come up with a sort of a final copy and everybody gets to put their 2 cents worth in, and then we'll institute it. And then, you know, what's the old saying, you know, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. It's it's kind of the same thing. You know, as soon as you put it in, that first patient comes in, you go, oh goodness, we need to have this on there because it's not working, or we're dropping the ball here, we're dropping the ball there. And so, you know, you kind of tweak those forms. And so over the years, these forms have all been tweaked and they've gotten to the point where it's nice and smooth and everything works well, and there's accountabilities built each step along the way.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorite books, actually I'm reading it for the second time, is The Checklist Manifesto. Have you read that one yet, Aaron?
I haven't read that. Who's that by?
It's Atul Gawande. He's a best-selling author, but he's also a general surgeon, and he is obsessed with checklists. And you and I, Aaron, I mean, this is how we run every aspect of our practices, with, you know, processes and procedures and checklists. Checklists are everything for the way that I run my businesses. Mm-hmm. And he went into all these different industries. He went into this industry about, you know, how they build high rises and the number of checks that have to happen to make sure that all the engineers are on the same page and that they're communicating correctly. So, you know, we're not super hyper specialized and not communicating with everybody else, because one person doesn't communicate something else to somebody else. And guess what? An 80 floor high rise is going to come tumbling down and thousands of people are going to die. Right. So he brings you into that industry of building high rises. And then he brings you into, you know, all the mistakes that happened with FEMA in the New Orleans disaster with you know, with the Hurricane Katrina. And then and because people, the checklist weren't there in place, you know? So this huge national organization wasn't communicating with the local organizations, and they weren't communicating with, the private sector. And it was just a big, 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 huge mistake, mistake after mistake. So we all saw how that all turned out. And then he went on, you know, into an airline simulator, and they broke down some of the hugest airline tragedies. And the reasons were because these checklists weren't in place. And then he brought the checklist to, you know, medicine, and he was working for the World Healthcare Organization, and they were trying to figure out how to decrease the incidence of infection in third world countries post surgery. And, you know, he got really inspired to make all these checklists. And just like you said, you know, the battle plan, usually doesn't work at first. And he said, you know, his checklists were so long and cumbersome, and like nobody adopted any of the things on the checklist. And by the end of the day, by the end of the first day in his own operating room, himself and his team had basically just said, you know what, it's easier without the checklist. So it's a matter of refining and refining and refining. And I don't know if it's anything like you, Aaron, but sometimes I'll set a checklist out, and if I don't get the input of the team, there's just so much resistance to implement that checklist. But like you said, and I didn't want to just, you know, just gloss over this, you get your team involved with creating the checklists and the processes and the procedures. And that makes all the difference in the world, because if they have a little bit of ownership to that process, no matter how small that process is, even if it's a simple form that's a quarter of a page and it's laminated, if they have ownership, authorship in that form, they will use it. I don't know if you found the same thing.
Yeah, I absolutely have found that, because it's really easy to go, oh, you want the checklist? That's great. I'm telling you, it's not going to work. And then you can make it not work. So,
yeah. Well,
I mean, you could say all the right words and you can make it not work. So we've experienced that a few times. And so what we have found, my initial bid to kind of get them on the same page as me is, I would say, you know, we all know that, you know, we always are constantly training people and we have turnover and that sort of thing. So wouldn't it be easier to train people if we had these checklists and we had these forms, so that, you know, it would be simpler and we could get up to speed much faster? And the immediate reaction to that was, oh, which one of us are you going to fire? You know, and I'm like, no, I'm not firing anybody. I'm just saying, you know, it's real life. Come on, people get pregnant, people move. Come on, give me a break. Yeah. And they're like, no, you know, it just didn't sell at all. What mm-hmm. did sell was, hey guys, you know, we're doing really good, but you know, we want to be the best practice we can possibly be. And doing these forms of checklists will help us keep from having things fall through the cracks, and it'll make our days easier and make things flow a lot smoother and just make everybody happier overall. What do you think? That sells. Okay. The other one didn't sell at all.
Yeah. Basically, the first way that you presented it was, hey, we want to use this document to train your replacement.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the second way that you put it was, hey, how can we as a team improve to the best of to our full potential, basically? And right. Obviously, you have to have a team in place that's motivated by personal growth and reaching their full potential. And that's a cultural thing that you've either developed or you're hiring based on that. And in your case, I think it's a little bit of both.
Right.
But if they're not motivated by, you know, getting or creating an atmosphere of continual growth, and they don't want to reach their full potential, then that's not going to motivate them. So, you know, that's a check. That's a check in place that if they're not motivated by either of those two ways, then you might not have the right person in the right position and that fits your culture.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a large part of what we see is some people are unmotivatable, and so there's not much you can do about that. But you know, if you're really pushing and you want to be good at your job and good at what you spend a large portion of your daylight hours doing, you know, you're going to be a little more open to doing something like that. The yeah. other thing that I talked about it in Washington, and that I also completely believe, is that, you know, you've got to reward people for doing more work. So, you know, if you're going to pay me the same to see 15 patients as to see 8 patients, I'm seeing eight patients and figuring out a way to get out early. Okay, mm-hmm. There's no way I'm doing twice the work and not get paid anymore. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So I think all of our hygienists are on a commission system, and it takes into account their overhead. It takes into account the cost of the assistant that's helping them, supplies, I mean, the whole nine yards. And it's not that complicated, but all those things are taken into account. It's pretty straightforward. And then the assistant who's assisting them is part of the general overall office bonus, which rewards them when the office does better. So the hygienist doesn't share in the office bonus, but the assistant does, because why should the assistant work extra hard so the hygienist can make more money? You know, that doesn't make any sense either. And neither one of them knows exactly what the other one's is. You know, you set those up the way you want to, mm-hmm. but the bottom line is that there is, you know, we're all human beings. There is an element of what's in it for me. What am I going to get for working extra hard? Because people just don't work extra hard to be nice. You know, they're interested in their career. They're interested in being really good at what they do, but you know, they need a little juice too. So they need to make a little more if they're going to contribute to the bottom line of the practice.
Yeah, we have the same. I think roughly we have the same setup. So I have a general pool bonus. So that's based on hitting three numbers. That's based on hitting the production goal for the month. They have to hit the collection goal for the month, and they have to hit a maximum overhead number for the month. They hit all those numbers and they get a percentage of collections for the month, and they split that evenly, excluding the hygienists. Okay. So, and then the hygienists get their own bonus, and it's that the old three times their hourly salary. Anything above three times their hourly salary, they're going to get a percentage bonus. Now, I don't know if your hygiene department's that way, but I think that our overall staff bonus is very similar.
Both mine are very similar and slightly different. You know, everybody does concentrates on what they're most interested in, but it's pretty close. I've had a couple of bonus systems in the office, and the ones that don't take into account overhead are killers. Eventually blow up on you, and I had that happen, and I had to change it, and changing a bonus system is just horrendous. I hated it. It was literally like ripping off a Band-Aid. And for about a month and a half, I just had to put out fires and help keep everybody going through the process. And in the end, everything turned out great. But, you know, it was really funny, because when we switched over to an overhead a bonus system that took into account the overhead, all of a sudden they were looking at the overhead. I mean, they were like, hey, how come this is on the credit card statement? We don't know what this is. And I'm like, well, haven't you guys been checking that? And they're like, well, you know, for the stuff that we know, sure, but we don't know what this thing is. Mm-hmm. So yeah. All of a sudden, you know, we got some of our overhead cleaned up really fast. And then we started looking for less expensive alternatives as far as places to buy supplies, office supplies, different types of equipment. So all of a sudden, they're in the game with you, and they're helping you keep that overhead down. And that's money that drops right to the bottom lines. That's really nice when that happens.
It really is. It really is. It's funny too, because just a word of caution, guys, if you guys are running a ton of your own personal expenses through the practices, through your practice for tax reasons or for whatever reason, I don't think that that's a great idea, because what you're trying to build is an asset. And the more profitable that you can appear on paper, the more of a saleable asset you will have, the easier it will be to attract a future partner, trial partner, and then eventually to be able to sell the practice and to look good on paper to the banks that are going to be lending to the potential transition people that you're going to be bringing into the practice. So one of the things that I don't believe in is running a bunch of personal expenses through the practice. But if you're currently doing that and you want to adopt a bonus structure like Aaron and I are using, you got to stop running personal expenses through there, because your team is going to literally look at that and go, the reason this is inflated is because your three cars are through here and your teenager's cell phones are through here, and that's not fair. So if you want to run your bonus program, your incentive program based on overhead, you're going to have to, first of all, stop running all personal stuff through the practice. That's the first thing. And second thing is, the benefit is, like Aaron just said, holy cow, do they start watching expenses. They are going to be the people that are actually searching for products that are less expensive. They're going to be looking to buy in bulk to save money. They're going to put 1 2x2 instead of 2 2x2s on your tray. They're going to give you 3 inches of floss instead of 6 inches of floss, right? And they're going to be like, oh, I think that we could probably sterilize that matrix band and use it again because those are $1 a piece. And it's like, wow, that is so cool when they get to that point and they actually take ownership on the practice because they're getting a percentage of the profit.
Right. You know, I don't know how you feel about this, Mark, but my feeling about people running stuff through the practice is I don't even care if you're running stuff through the practice, but know what that number is and make sure that's not adding to the overhead. You know, sure. I mean, it's a matter of playing fair. You know, if you want them to work extra hard to make things happen, then you got to play the game fair. That's just my overall feeling with it.
Yeah, I guess I take a pretty hard line on that, but I am constantly looking, you know, Aaron, I'm basically looking at the practice numbers of over 50 practices each and every month. That's not even including my own because I'm analyzing and I'm finding ways to help dental practices become more profitable, and I'm looking for line items and areas of opportunity. So, you know, I'm pretty black and white about it. Hey, if this isn't enhancing the practice, if this is not a true business expense, let's eliminate it, and let's stop this whole two sets of books, one that the accountant can see, and then and the IRS can see, and then one that's reality. So I'm pretty cut and dry about that, but that's just my anal nature. So we went down a rabbit hole, but I think that was pretty interesting. So anything left to talk about as far as your $2,000 to $6,000 per hygienist per day in the hygiene department talk that you gave?
Not a whole lot. I mean, the thing is that when you start doing this, you don't just jump on and you jump on there. Like I said, I'm checking two double booked hygienists, you know, all day long for most of the days that I'm working, but that isn't where I started. I started with my one hygienist, and we double booked, you know, the really busy hours at the end of the day because we couldn't find another hygienist. So that allowed us to take more new patients and that sort of thing during those real popular hours. And then that just sort of spread up through her schedule. And pretty soon we got to a point where she was double booked all the time. And then we had to get another hygienist in. Well, once she came in, we, you know, single booked her for a while until she kind of built up things and then started double booking her. So it's a little like, going lifting weights. You know, you don't start out doing bicep curls at 50 pounds. You start out at 5 or 10, and you got to get used to having to jump up, having to go check those patients. And then how do you keep your procedures going at the same time? So all of my assistants, all of my assistants, first of all, rotate through hygiene and through my side. So we don't have like hygiene assistants. So everybody can do everything. But the assistants on my side are trained to do everything they can legally do. So I know where I can take breaks in my schedule, and they can kind of keep it moving by doing the parts that they can do. And at the same time, over in hygiene, they're calling me before they absolutely need me. So I have about a 15-minute window once I'm called to get over there and do the check. So I'm not having to jump up at a crucial part of a procedure just to go do a hygiene check. I have some latitude there, and I'm always making sure if I'm going to sit down and let's say I'm doing, you know, an implant or, multiple extractions or something like that, I kind of check the hygienist, make sure they're good first before I sit down, because I don't want to get called away in the middle of something that I don't want to take a break in the middle of.
Sure, sure. I'm so glad you brought that up because it reminds me of our little simple system. Now, you guys use headsets at your practice, and your headsets actually have such a good range that you can walk across the street to Starbucks and take everybody's order with your headsets, which I think is so funny. So somebody walks over with a headset on and says, okay, what's everybody want? I'm here in line at Starbucks, and she just writes it down, which I think is awesome. But what we do is something very, very similar, but the hygienists are trained to give me kind of, because I'm doing 2 or 3 hygiene checks per hour as well, they give me a range of time. So we have these little route sheets and a tiny little piece of Velcro that goes on the outside of the door of the operatory that I'm working on. So we don't ever give a verbal cue in our office. Everything's done very, very quietly because I don't want somebody that I'm doing an 8-unit, $9,000 bridge on to know that I've been called to hygiene 3 times in the middle of quote unquote their time. Right. So everything's done much more subtly than that. So the hygienist will come over right after she's done doing the x-rays or right in the beginning of the appointment, and she'll put up a little route card that says, hey, this is, it gives a, it just gives a little brief history. This is a laminated piece of cardboard, and it says, you know, patient's name, last time they were in, most recent x-rays were taken, is there pending treatment, and whatever kind of insurance they have, if they happen to be an insurance or PPO patient or fee-for-service, whatever. So there's five or six things written on this card. But the important thing that I'm trying to get at here is they write the time frame when the patient checked in and when the patient is due to check out. So now I have literally a half hour, 45 minutes window for three different hygienists to get over to their side and do the check. So they don't come over with 5 minutes to go and their schedule will completely fall apart if I'm in the middle of something hairy. So they give me, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes of a window to come over to do that check. And they already know that when I come over there, they'll stop whatever they're doing, even if they're right in the middle of scaling somebody. They'll let me come in. They'll introduce me to the patient if I don't know them, or they'll reintroduce me if it's been a while, and then I'll do my check, and then I'll walk over next door to the other hygienist, and even if they're in the middle of a cleaning, I'll do that check as well. So I'll get those two taken care of. But the bottom line is I have a window of opportunity that's not 5 minutes, and if you don't get up in 5 minutes, everybody's schedule is going to be screwed. So that's just a little tip, and clearly your people do that too. They give you, you know, a 15-minute window to find just the right time to leave your patients.
Yeah, they know that when I'll walk in, I'll go, is this a good time? Like, I don't know. And I always tell them the proper answer is yes. And then we'll take care of things. But we do something a little different. We actually have like a whiteboard that sits in the hallway, and it has the first column is time, the second column is treatment, and the third column is room. And so when I'm working through, or I know that I need to get up, I'll get up, I go look at the board, it tells me which room to walk into first, what time this was posted when they were ready, what the treatment is, or, you know, if I'm doing a check, where that is, and which room to go to. Mm-hmm. So that I can just zip right over there and do that. And then the assistants keep that up to date. So while I'm in the room, they're updating the board. And I know that once I get finished with all those, I can walk back in and continue treatment. But, and we've worked out, you know, what takes priority and that sort of thing. It's also nice because when I go in to give an injection, they write the time of the injection. So I know, are they numb yet? I can just look how long has it been since I've given the injection, and we know we're good to go or we're not good to go.
That's cool. That's cool. And, you know, when you have that many ops going at one time, it's important to kind of have some sort of a system like that. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I'm the only guy that doesn't wear radio because I don't. It's too distracting. I can't think about what I'm doing and listen to all the calls going back and forth. And then all of my assistants have the radios, and generally you can't hear that. And if they're walking behind me to go write down on the sheet, I just tell them, you know, don't make the call when you're standing behind me in the hallway. It's a little ridiculous.
So. Yeah, and I have a hard time having a conversation with somebody when I hear background chatter happening in my ear. And and then you have, you know, you have your loops on, and then your light from the loops, and then you have, right, you know, your another battery pack strapped to your side, and then you have another earpiece. It's just cumbersome. I mean, I feel like an astronaut when I have all that stuff on, and it's just I don't move well. So for that reason, I also don't wear the radio, and everybody else does.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, Aaron, I wanted to talk more with you about your 40% growth this year, but we are out of time today, and I want to be respectful of your time because I know you have to go to CrossFit. and for those of you guys out there that don't know, Dr. Nicholas is one of our coaches at the Dental Success Institute, and he actually goes on the road just like I do. We go into practices, and we set up systems just like we talked about in practices that are looking to be more systemized and more efficient and more profitable, really. So we have this mastermind group that we both are a part of. And Aaron is constantly speaking. He's on the road, and he's helping me coach other clients with just the types of things that we're talking about today. So I've decided that Aaron has so much great insight, and his practice is so successful, and he's seen so many other great successful practices that he's going to be a regular contributor and guest host on this podcast. So Aaron, thank you for agreeing to that. I know that you're super busy, God knows there's probably other things that you'd rather be doing, but you're really, really good at this. So thank you for agreeing to do this with me.
Well, no problem. Thanks for asking, Mark.
Yeah, so that's it for today, guys. There's going to be more with Aaron Nicholas, I promise. Within probably 4 to 6 weeks, we'll get him back on here, and we'll dig in deeper on how somebody after 27 years in practice is able to experience a 40% growth curve, which is mind-boggling. So that's all I have for you today. Any further comments or anything to add, Dr. Nicholas?
I don't right now. I'm just amazed that we said we were going to talk about a certain number of things, and like we didn't even get close to all the things we said we were going to talk about.
Oh, I know. My gosh. So. And we didn't scratch the surface today, but I think we did do justice to the hygiene department discussion. If you guys are interested in the book I was talking about, it's called The Checklist Manifesto, and I will leave that that in the show notes so you guys can look into that. Aaron, it's funny because Aaron and I are constantly going, oh, have you read this one yet? Have you read that one yet? We're podcast junkies, so we trade back and forth the podcasts that we happen to be listening to and books that we're constantly suggesting books to each other. So that one, Aaron, The Checklist Manifesto, make sure you read that one.
And yeah, I've got that written down already.
And then another one is called The Toyota Way of Leadership, which I thought was just fantastic because you hear about Toyota being just this awesome systematic organization that is obsessed with quality. And they talk about their checklists and their and how they train their people to be leaders. So it's a leading leaders type of philosophy. And it's very, very Japanese in culture. But, you know, they have like white belts and masters and all these different neat ways of managing their people, which is also very fascinating. I think you'll like that one too, Aaron.
Yeah, I wrote that one down too. I haven't heard of either of these, so that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I go deep. I go deep, man. I look really into a lot of systemization books. I'm obsessed with systemization and leadership. So those are a couple of the ones that I don't think that either one of them is a bestseller, even though the author of The Checklist Manifesto is a best-selling author. But both of them are really good reads and good to listen to on Audible as well if you guys have an Audible account. Cool. So that's all I have for you guys all today. Right, thank you again, Aaron. You're awesome. Once again, you've taught me a lot. Even though we talk about this stuff all the time, you've taught me again. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, guys, until next week, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Aaron Nicholas. And that wraps it up for another episode of the Dentalpreneur Podcast. I thank you so much for joining us this week, and we will talk to you next week. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Dentalpreneur Podcast. Check out TrueDentalSuccess.com for full recaps of every show, a schedule of our live events, free video tutorials, and a whole host of practice-building resources.